Okay, so Tony, welcome to Let's Talk Property, our podcast. We want to talk today about mortgages.
Yes, thanks very much for having me, by the way. It's really nice to be here.
Pleasure. I think we've talked a lot about the nitty-gritty of property, whether it's property management or sales, getting our plumbers in, talking about AI and maintenance, all these different things. And actually, a really important part of sales is the mortgage. And it's something that I don't think probably people put enough time and attention into. And I'm hoping you're going to be able to give us some very useful snippets of information that help someone that's looking to buy a home, whether it's just for themselves or a buy to let, and make that journey a little bit easier.
Absolutely. Perfect. Exactly.
I think we'll learn a thing or two as well, Ross, because our mortgage is coming up in May. So,
Got to turn the new
exactly.
Sounds good to me.
So why don't you just give us a little bit? So you're working at Capricorn at the moment. How did you get there? What's your background? How do you end up in mortgages? It'd be really great to kind of better understand that.
So really, really good question. So when I was in university in Liverpool, don't know if you can tell by the accent, if that's a bit of a giveaway. I actually started working in an estate agency in sales and lettings. Really liked it. Always interested in property. And then a week after I graduated, started there full time. Realized that is the kind of industry that I wanted to be in. I was an agent in Liverpool for a couple of years, and then I thought, where is the best place to be for property? So I moved to London in 2013. So I've been here now for what, 12, 13 years. And yeah, I spent about half my career as an estate agent before I moved over to mortgages. And then I've been at Capricorn now. Capricorn, by the way, we're an independent London-based mortgage brokerage, and we've just had our 20th anniversary. And I'm one of the senior advisors and team leaders at Capricorn. So in my whole career, I've spent half of my time as an estate agent and half as a mortgage advisor.
Nice. That sounds pretty good to me. I like
Yeah.
it. You moved to London the year we got married, right? 2013.
Nice. Big
Flown
year.
Great year.
By, eh?
Great
Huge year.
year.
I just remember that. It's always the year after the 2012 Olympics. So actually, it's a bit of a shame you missed that. But anyway, we're getting totally sidetracked. So I am looking to buy a house in London.
Yep.
What would your advice be to someone today with everything that's going on?
Yep. So very, very first step before you even contact agents and start carrying out viewings, first thing you need to do is sit down with a mortgage advisor, find out, number one, what's possible from an affordability side, what kind of purchase price you can target. Number two, can you actually get a mortgage? Because I think, and I sit down and I speak to a lot of people, most people start their searches assuming that they are going to be able to get a mortgage. And unfortunately, it's not always as simple as that. Especially I sit down with a lot of first-time buyers and they tell me, for example, my credit score is perfect. I've got a 999 credit score. I've got no debt whatsoever. When a lender is assessing whether they'll give you a mortgage based on your credit, they're looking at your entire credit history since day one. They don't actually use credit score, by the way. So the whole credit scoring system, when you go online, Experian, Equifax, that's just for your benefit. What they're looking at is ever since, well, they'll pull your entire credit history since day one, but they're focusing on the last 6 years. What they're looking at is over the last 6 years, what's your history like of having credit commitments? Have you had them? Do you pay your credit card on time? Do you have any late or defaulted payments on your credit file? Sometimes, as a first-time buyer, depending on your deposit level, not really having a credit history can actually impact your ability to secure a mortgage. And that's why, before it gets to the point that you're going out and viewing properties, sit down, confirm that you actually can get a mortgage, and then you won't be disappointed later on.
What sort of stuff do people need? So say we sit down, say we're getting a mortgage for the first time, we sit down with you. What is it you're gonna look at? Like how deep into our lives are you gonna go?
So if you're first time buyers and you want the full hand holding service, we're going to sit down, obviously talk about your situation in detail. What we want to find out is what does your income look like? What kind of commitments do you have? And by commitments, by the way, lenders don't really look at like what we call discretionary commitments, because they know, for example, that if you need to stop shopping at Waitrose and you have to start shopping at Tesco, you can do that to afford your mortgage, or maybe cut down on meal restaurants or holidays or something else. What they're more concerned about is, like, do you have a lot of credit card debt? Do you have car finance? Do you pay nursery fees, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So we have to factor all of those into the mortgage.
We've just had a friend of ours who's looking to get a mortgage and they just had to get rid of their leased car. And they earn quite well. They've got a pretty good deposit, and because they're paying for nursery fees and they have a leased car. And so they're like, well, we can't get rid of nursery fees, but we have got rid of our car. And then at least once we get the mortgage, they'll then just get the car back, right?
Yeah, exactly that, 100%. And that's why you really want to know these things. And once we establish, based on the level of cash you have as well for deposit and stamp duty and everything else, because I mean, in terms of deposit level, you definitely want to start your search once you have the cash you need for your deposit and stamp duty and you've been pre-approved for that mortgage. Mm-hmm. So we need to work out, based on the level of cash you have and based on your mortgage affordability, what can you buy at? And then from that point, a good mortgage advisor would give you a really clear picture around like how the process works, what happens once you have an offer accepted, who does what, how long everything takes. They'll also as well, because we use the phrase mortgage advisor, our job is not for someone to sit down and say, oh, a 2-year fixed deal, 25-year term. Our job's very much to listen to your situation and make recommendations.
Okay,
have you thought about this? What's your future plans for the property? How long do you see yourself living there? What's your budget for your monthly repayments? Okay, this is what I advise you do. And then once we've established that, the most important step after that is to get the mortgage pre-approval in place. So that's the few different terms for it, but they're all the same. Decision in principle, agreement in principle, pre-approval. Once you have that pre-approval, as a buyer who needs a mortgage, you're in the strongest position you can be in to go out and start making offers on properties.
Okay, so it's that third layer of getting basically approval on your mortgage that you kind of need to have in your back pocket, ready to go if you're looking to buy somewhere.
Absolutely. Wow. 100%.
Okay, so that one needs to be done first.
It's really, really important. And just going back to the pre-approval side of things. So I mentioned they look at the last 6 years. People don't realize just how when it comes to credit checks, one late payment on your credit file, for example, in the last 6 years can make it difficult to secure a mortgage today. And I get it does happen to a lot of people. You know, you might not have a direct debit set up on something. Usually it's the case that someone's moved from one address to another address. They thought like a utility bill account would be closed down. Because they've moved address, they're no longer getting post anymore. It's only when it comes to mortgage pre-approval that you actually find out about these issues.
So if you say a late payment on a credit card, even if you just got busy and forgot to pay it, even if you have all the money in your account, that can actually stop you getting a mortgage.
It can make it very difficult to get a mortgage, yeah. It might be the...
Is that like a late, as in 2 days late, doesn't make any difference?
1 day late.
It doesn't make any difference. It's not like the payments that you're saying, if someone's moved address, sometimes you close an account. Like when I was younger, over 6 years ago,
yeah,
had that where I moved and I thought we'd close something down and then I still had a £10 bill to pay.
Yeah.
And obviously that then became £120 because I hadn't paid it and they'd been chasing. And obviously I had to clear that when we got our, I think it was for our first mortgage, we had to clear it just to clear that debt off.
Yeah, 100%. Lenders can be really strict. In their eyes, it's very much, well, it was your responsibility to kind of get this closed down. So we are going to factor it in.
They're so mean.
I know.
If you've got lots of money in your account and you're a day late, I mean, it doesn't really mean that, you know, you're not able to pay. You shouldn't be allowed to get a mortgage, but... You would also think that'd be quite widespread. Like, I think people, that would happen all the time for all sorts of reasons.
It does. It's really, really common. And that's where a good mortgage broker comes in. Because if you were to go to a bank directly and apply for a pre-approval or apply for a mortgage and then it got declined on credit, that bank would say, sorry, we're not going to get you a mortgage. And then that's it. Whereas what we'll do is we'll look at alternatives. And I can say, by the way, I am talking about worst case scenarios there. If you've only got one late payment on your credit file in the last 6 years, and it was a while ago, like at least 6 months ago, you probably are going to be able to get a mortgage with a big high street bank.
We've just scared everybody. Yeah. Everybody's like, yeah, all right.
but people don't realize the impact that it has. Yeah. It might be the case that instead of looking at the best deal, we have to shop around a little bit, maybe try two or three lenders before we find one that passes, basically. So our whole point is, when you have an offer accepted on a property, and I mean, you guys know so much better than me on this point because obviously it's what you do every day. you feel great. You're really excited about everything. You're already picturing the day that you get the keys to your property. You don't want to have these really negative discussions and take that really good feeling away. So get that out the way first and then be on your way with your search.
But I guess that probably, thinking it from the other side, obviously, because occasionally things like this come up, if they haven't done it pre-viewings, they might think they've got everything in principle because they've had a, they've done an online calculator or something saying, oh, this is how much we could borrow or this and that.
Yeah.
Actually, that's the important part, because the seller then is potentially going to have a delay trying to find out what this issue is.
Yeah.
And obviously then there's a bit of uncertainty there, which probably doesn't help.
Yeah, 100%. You want everything to get off to a really confident start, everything to feel nice and smooth. And the pre-approval as well, the decision in principle. There's no cost involved. Yeah. There's no commitment involved. And one of the biggest, not objections I get, but one of the biggest questions that I get asked when we talk about it is, will secure and pre-approval have a negative impact on my credit? Obviously, as a mortgage advisor, we're not going to do anything that negatively impacts your credit. When you apply for some kinds of finance, it's going to leave a hard search on your credit file, and that will negatively impact it. Pre-approvals with 99% of lenders, it's a soft footprint credit check. That means it has no negative impact. So there is literally zero disadvantage to obtaining mortgage pre-approval. Everyone should do it when they start their search.
Before their search? Or as
well,
search.
Well, yeah, exactly.
As soon as they... Yeah. I know we've discussed this, like you've said this before to us when we met, that, you know, get people in to speak to you guys earlier rather than when it comes to the offer situation.
As soon as someone decides, I want to buy a property, that's when they should sit down.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. And then when should, just on the back of that, someone's been looking for 8 months. So we're now, 8 months ago, they started looking, haven't found something, and they've got something in principle from 8, 9 months ago. Should they need to come back now? As in, like, how often do you think someone should, like, when things change, how often should they speak to you, the mortgage advisors, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, every client that I sit down with, once we've got the pre-approval in place, I always say to everyone as a next step, let's obviously keep in contact on your search. As soon as you see a property that you like, before you make an offer on it, come back to me, send me a link to the property, let me know what it is that you're thinking of offering. And then not only can we update the mortgage options and obtain new pre-approval if we need to, something that people overlook, we also need to check that the property is going to be okay to secure a mortgage on as well.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to applying for a mortgage, it's not only about you, it's also about the property. And a few people might be thinking, well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't a bank lend on a property? And if you're talking about a nice big house in Southwest London, obviously there's very little reason why someone wouldn't lend on it. But you might be looking at an apartment that has a short lease. And by short lease, in the lender's eyes, below 75 years would make it more difficult to secure a mortgage on. It might be, obviously, you guys know just as well as I do about, like, cladding and fire risk assessment and the issue that that's caused in the industry as well. That can also cause problems. Or properties above certain kinds of commercial units.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I love KFC every now and again.
Oh, really?
I love.
So if you love KFC as well,
Rudolph loves to wind me up about KFC, but that's something else.
I do love KFC. It's my guilty pleasure.
That's all right.
It's like
Dopes as well.
It isn't anyway.
It's like, would I want to live in an apartment directly above a KFC?
Yeah.
And that's why when you have apartments above certain kinds of commercial units, it can be quite difficult to secure mortgage finance on, because when a bank goes out to carry out a mortgage valuation on a property, they're looking to assess two things. They're looking to check, number one, is the property worth the price that you're paying for it?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, worst case scenario, let's say the bank had to repossess that property and they had to sell it quickly. How easy would they be able to sell it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. So say, for example, because the interest rates have been changing a lot, right? Yeah,
they have.
Say if you have your mortgage agreed in principle, and there's a new Bank of England are making another one of their wonderful announcements. And since you got your mortgage approved, the interest rate has dropped. What do you need to do anything at that point? Like, is it worth coming back to you and having another look, or not, what would you do?
Absolutely. So all of my clients I deal with, so from the minute we submit the application, we will open up an email channel between our client, estate agent, solicitor. And the main reason why, we want to be looped into updates so we can gauge how everything's progressing and when like exchange of contracts is likely to happen. And that way we can proactively keep looking at rates and options so that if better deals come available, if you have a mortgage offer in place and a better deal comes available, we can update your mortgage offer.
Oh, so even if you've already submitted an offer on a property and you're about to exchange, you can update your mortgage even that close?
You can do. I would advise try to avoid, if possible, waiting until you're about to exchange.
Mm.
And the reason for that is lenders are very busy, especially now. Their turnaround times can be really, really slow. When it comes to amending a mortgage offer, let's say you've got a rate of 4.5% and we're updating it to a rate of 4.25%. The mortgage offer that you have in place, that basically gets withdrawn, and then a new mortgage offer has to be issued.
Okay.
Now, most of the time, it's just a process of just waiting a few days for the revised mortgage offer to be issued. Sometimes, because these big banks, they have big underwriting teams, you might have had one underwriter who's got everything approved, and then the mortgage offer goes back and another underwriter picks it up, and then that other underwriter could take a look at the case and think, well, actually, I'm going to ask a few more questions about this, or I'm going to ask for a few documents that the other underwriter didn't ask for. And then all of a sudden, you can be about to exchange contracts, and then there's a big delay in getting the revised mortgage offer issued. So you absolutely don't want to leave it till last minute, especially if there's a tight deadline.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But otherwise, if the Bank of England interest rate changes, it's worth, if you can and have the time to go back and relook at that.
Definitely worth
again.
Definitely worth checking in. The only point I'd make there is, so the Bank of England base rate changing does have an impact on fixed rates, but fixed rates aren't directly priced by the base rate. So what that means is sometimes the base rate might change and you might not really notice a difference to rates. There are other factors as well. Without boring you into too many technical details, like one of the factors around rate movements is like lender competition. So lenders are always in competition with each other. So let's say lender A, for example, decides to reduce their rates, and then they're undercutting 3 or 4 big high street banks, and they're taking away business from those banks. All of the lenders can only sit there for a certain amount of time losing business before they think, well, hang on, we have to reduce our rates now as well. So it's a bit of a herd mentality, and it also works the opposite way around. One or two lenders start increasing their rates, then the likes of your smaller lenders, they end up getting really, really busy, and then they have to increase their rates as well. So there are a few other factors around it. It's not just about base rate movements.
Okay, wow, I'm learning so much. I mean, I haven't looked into a lot of stuff on mortgages anyway, but I am learning a lot.
Our job is to pass it to the experts.
Exactly. This is one of our partners, as we like to say, that we really do hand over to, because I mean, we can't find a mortgage anyway. So anyway, so I have a question for you. Like, as a mortgage broker, why would you go with a mortgage broker as opposed to going directly to a bank or kind of shopping around yourself?
Yeah. So it's a really good question. It's obviously about service and expertise, isn't it? I mean, if your situation's very, very straightforward, yes, technically you could probably go out there and spend a lot of time and find a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But is it going to be the best deal? And is it going to be the best mortgage for your situation? And it kind of goes back to what I mentioned at the start about assessing your needs and assess your situation. Lenders have very different criteria, and it means that depending on your situation, lender A might give you a much higher level of borrowing than lender B, or lender B, you might have a higher chance of that application being declined versus lender C. Where we use our expertise, a really experienced mortgage advisor, we know lender criteria inside and out. When we sit down and have a chat about your situation, we should already be thinking about the best lenders to approach. Mm.
Yeah.
So it saves a lot of time. We're looking at every lender across the market, making sure that when we're telling you this is your maximum purchasing power and this is the best deal available to you, it absolutely is.
So in terms of like all the different lenders out there, is it mainly just sort of the big sort of high street banks, or are there also lots of other companies out there that provide mortgages and you kind of have access to them? Like, how do you do that? Do you have like a mortgage broker platform that you go to and like that's where you kind of find everybody? Or
yeah,
like comparethemeerkat.com, but for mortgage brokers?
Yeah, yeah. So we
that's what I'm imagining anyway.
Sure. Sure. A little bit more technical, you know. We do. I mean, we work with all of the most biggest, most reputable lenders out there. Now, there are some lenders out there that don't actually work directly with borrowers. So that means that you only have access to them through someone like myself. Now, to be honest, I think about maybe 60%, 60 to 70% of all of the mortgages in the UK are typically submitted with your big five, big six high street banks, the likes of your Halifax, your Santander, your HSBC, your NatWest. Your situation might be a bit quirkier, and it may mean we need to approach a less mainstream bank. Just because you haven't heard of them doesn't mean that they're not reputable and they're not big. It just depends entirely on your situation.
Okay. And also, I mean, I suppose, like, what would make, like, why did you pick one mortgage broker over another? Like, how would you know? I suppose a bad broker is someone that just doesn't bother go look at the best rates and just pick something and kind of gets on with it. Is there anything else? Like, what advice would you give to someone who's looking to work with a mortgage broker?
Yeah, so different brokers have access to different kinds of lenders. There are a lot of brokers out there that won't be able to access all of the main lenders out there. There are a lot of brokers out there as well who, obviously, you have people with like different levels of experience. You have some brokers who specialize with dealing with certain kinds of clients. Like myself, for example, I work at Capricorn on a self-employed basis. I know self-employed lending criteria like the back of my hand. If you're self-employed, whether you're a sole trader or you have a limited company.
That's really interesting.
Exactly. That is something that I absolutely specialize in. Versus some brokers out there, they may just not deal with a lot of those kinds of borrowers. So it's really, really important.
Okay, so there are brokers that will specialise, for example, in someone who is looking to buy, who is either self-employed or has a limited company.
Yeah.
Or brokers that just deal with maybe more generic, kind of someone's that's just employed by a bigger company. I didn't know that. That's good to know, because that's us really, isn't it?
I told you, that's right.
I know.
Well, the one reason why we've got Tony here is...
we got to get us a good deal.
Thanks.
Okay. But on that then, so just because it, you know, say as an example, and even though, you know, we work in property, mortgages is not something that we spend a lot of time doing, looking at, because we pass it to you. If we have a mortgage coming up in May-ish, when should we have started looking already? Are we about to get into trouble from you for not starting, or should that conversation be, you know?
No, it's definitely it would definitely be on my radar.
Yeah.
It'd be a little bit too early to start the process now.
Good to know.
But I have a lot of existing clients, so I help every single week with their remortgages.
Yeah.
My advice is, so you can actually reserve a new deal up to 6 months before your current deal ends. The reason for that is mortgage offers are valid for up to 6 months. So in terms of reserving a new deal, what we mean is we would submit an application with a new lender, with whichever lender is offering the best deal. Mortgage offers issued within a week, 2 weeks of the application being submitted. And then you have that mortgage offer that's there and it's valid for up to that 6 month period. You're not committed to the mortgage at that point. So my approach to that would be, seeing as though there is no upfront cost typically or no commitment to securing a new mortgage offer and having it there, we get that mortgage offer issued. And then every 4 weeks, for example, I diarize just carrying out a rate review, checking in with you guys and letting you know if there are better deals available. And if rates reduce, we can update your mortgage offer, or we might even decide to submit an application with a different bank later on down the line. I mean, I've had a few conversations with clients this week, and we actually went through the remortgage process around the time of the Truss Kwarteng budget.
I feel so sorry for anyone during that time.
I know. And we were looking at rates. I mean, I think rates hit a ceiling of like high fives at that point. And then I'm catching up with these clients now, and the conversation's really nice because I'm telling them this is how much the rate's reduced by. We're knocking off a few £100 a month off your monthly repayments. And as we've seen, the market's been really volatile over the last couple of years. All it takes is a negative headline around inflation. We've got a winter budget coming up in November as well. We've got no idea what that's going to introduce. If you're having a conversation with a broker and they're telling you that you can reserve a deal that's so much lower than your current deal and there's no cost or commitment to doing it, you may as well do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think the budget's going to impact mortgages, or is it just a complete, we don't know, we're just going to ride the wave like you are?
Yeah, it's really difficult to say, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to wait and see what kind of surprises that they announce. Bank of England base rate, like I said, does have some kind of an impact on fixed rates. Your guess is as good as mine right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
You haven't got a, what's it called? Magic ball.
Crystal ball.
While we're talking about it, what do you guys think about if they were to make those stamp duty changes?
Like you, I think we're going to have to ride the waves and work out, because I think, you know, you see people are holding out, waiting now, but it's going to be, you know.
I find it really hard to see like big changes to stamp duty coming in, like getting rid of stamp duty and bringing in some kind of annual tax. I find it very hard to see, but I've been in property since I was this high because my dad ran the business before.
Yeah.
We did. And so I've just always known it to be one way. And I think, you know, I very much feel like if the London property market isn't doing well, or is struggling, or is going through different challenges, you know, generally the London economy is struggling, or, you know, the UK economy really affects it wider. And I can't imagine that such a big change is going to come in. Maybe I'm in denial.
It's a big change, isn't it?
It's a huge change. And no one really knows, even to make that change, you have no idea the real impact that that would have on people. And I think everyone is so, I think many people are squeezed with inflation, you know, rising food costs, all of those things as it is. Everybody's disposable, no one's disposable income really is going up, especially sort of, you know, the working people that, you know, Labour are trying to help specifically. And so I think to have an annual property tax effectively on top of your mortgage and everything else going out is other countries do it, of course, but it's just a complete, we just don't operate in the same way as that. We are a different country. We have a different model that we work to. And so I can't personally see how it would work. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe it's a great solution and it works well. But I mean, I imagine it's going to be harder for people to get mortgages because you're going to have an extra $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $8,000 coming out a month now that you need to take into consideration when you're letting a mortgage.
Yeah, 100%.
We had a discussion with someone yesterday. We were just chatting about this. And they were saying, and they haven't bought a property in a while, but they were saying, you know, when I think about potentially downsizing, she was saying, you know, I just factor in the stamp duty as part of that cost, where if that gets taken away and there's a annual tax or whatever it's going to be, so it's just spreading that. It's not like it's just, you know, it's just gone with the property sale. It's going to be, you know, forever there.
You just lump it in. What can you afford? And you include the cost of stamp duty within that. And then that cost is done.
Because obviously if the money's there, if you keep that money to the side, you know, there's some people that, you know, maybe okay with dealing with the money, but suddenly there's a little pot there supposed to pay for that.
Yeah.
You know, and then that'll be used for a holiday or for something else. And then.
Or to redo your windows.
Yeah.
It's like these things are expensive.
It's just like obviously cost of utilities increasing, council tax. I live in an apartment, and in the 2 years, I bought it 2 years ago. In the 2 years that I've lived there, my service charges have increased by 30%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough.
We used to have a block management business which we sold.
Really?
And a part of the reason we sold it was we had sort of 50 buildings and up to 20 flats in sort of a building was the sort of maximum. But the cost going up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't my fees going up. We were trying to keep our fees reasonable. But the cost of everything was going up around it. So then suddenly you're asking people for 10-15% more, and we're the one getting abused for that. And I was like, look, my fees have not changed.
Yeah.
If anything, and we did everything to make sure insurances were staying as best they could, but obviously just the cost of running a lift or whatever is in there have gone up. And actually, you know, that has a negative impact. Like leasehold properties are, you know, you can't get rid of leasehold property because there's so many people that are under the leases. But maybe there's some more control that needs to be in there. But that's another factor. That's a whole different thing. You've got that. You've got the Renters Reform Bill. You've got the stamp duty. There's so many parts to the UK property system that, you know, I don't think we can overhaul it all in one go.
I wish you guys were looking after my block.
I wish I wasn't. I can help. I can advise you. I can help. I can help.
If you need any advice,
if you need any help on like making sure that you can, you know, go back forward. But yeah, it's a completely different ball game.
And just on that point as well, guys, about you know, situations changing, people deciding on the back of like life changes or something else that they have to move. So something that I'm dealing with a lot right now as well. Let's say you have a mortgage in place and you secured a 5-year fixed deal a couple of years ago. So you're locked into that 5-year fixed deal. Yeah. If you sell the property and you repay the mortgage, you're going to have to pay a big penalty to the bank. And just to give you an idea of what the penalties are like, so they're called early repayment charges. So the longer you fix for, the more expensive they are. So if you were to fix a mortgage for 2 years, the early repayment charge for exiting that deal early would typically be about 2-3% of the outstanding loan amount.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So on a £500,000 loan amount, we're talking about what, £10,000-£15,000 to exit that mortgage deal early.
Okay. And then just trying to claw back their interest then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, on a 5-year fixed deal, it can be as high as 5-6% of the outstanding loan amount.
Ouch.
So then on that, if, which I guess would be, you know, people were like, oh, I can't move because my mortgage, you know, I've got 3 years left on my mortgage.
Yeah.
But they want to move or they need to move for different circumstances. What can they do with the mortgage?
Yeah. So what they can do is they can potentially port the mortgage to a new property. So your high street lenders, all of your high street lenders typically with a fixed rate mortgage, they'll allow you to transfer that mortgage to a new property. It's called porting because you're not repaying it. You avoid any kind of early repayment charges.
Yeah.
The only potential disadvantage of that. So let's say you have an outstanding mortgage of 500,000 and you need to borrow 750,000 to buy this new property. So you can transfer that £500,000 across. The additional £250,000 that you need to borrow. So you borrow that from the existing bank. You can't go to a new bank. All of the borrowing has to stay with that bank. So you borrow that extra 250 and you've got now 750,000. The additional borrowing is on a new deal so that it's on a separate rate of interest. So what that means is you go from having one mortgage and one rate to two separate mortgages, two rates of interest. And most importantly, the deals are going to expire at different points. And that means it becomes difficult to manage any remortgages in the future because you've got two separate dates to manage. And it means that you might be kicking the can down the road of eventually having to pay a penalty at some point when it comes to remortgage or selling. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's really, really important, even when it comes to porting, yes, your bank can handle it for you. Speak to someone independently about, in that scenario, whether you should port the mortgage or whether you should bite the bullet on paying a penalty and approaching a new bank.
That's obviously all of it's interesting, but that's a good point because obviously that's the bit that people, you know, probably don't realize that they could do. And actually, as you said, it's kicking a can down the road. At some point, you're probably going to get stuck with it. Sometimes you might have to just bite it early, to get better rate.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some cases. Obviously, if you're on one of these historically low rates of like 1%, 2%, and you've got a couple of years left on that, it's really unlikely that it's going to make sense to repay that mortgage early, pay a penalty and go to a new bank. In some cases, if you secured that mortgage a couple of years ago on a rate of 5% plus, and you can now get a much, much lower rate, and the early repayment charge is quite low, and the difference in rate means you're going to save that in interest over the next couple of years. In some cases, it can actually make sense to pay a penalty and to exit early.
Yeah.
We just need to take a look at the options and work out what the cheapest cost scenario is.
But I guess that's speaking to someone like yourself and making sure
that's
there.
Exactly.
Okay. And then the only thing we haven't touched on are buy-to-let mortgages. How's that market going at the moment? Are you getting quite a lot of good inquiries through for people wanting buy-to-let?
We are still getting inquiries through. A lot of international inquiries, a lot of people looking to buy from outside of the UK investment properties. Domestically, not as many. And I think the main reason for that is with rates increasing over the last kind of couple of years, lender rental stress tests have increased as well. And what I mean by that is, so the difference between affordability for a residential mortgage versus a buy-to-let mortgage, if you want to take out a mortgage on a property to live in, it's assessed based on your income. And then the bank will offer you 4.5 to 5.5 times usually your annual income. When you're taking out a buy-to-let mortgage, the level of borrowing is based on the potential rent the property generates. And it's not enough for you to just say to the bank, this is how much the property is going to generate in rent. All of the banks have their own rental stress test, and they determine, based on your level of deposit, what kind of rent that property would need to generate. Now, because of rates increasing, these rental stress tests are really high. So what it means in practical terms, you can get a buy-to-let mortgage in principle with a 25% deposit. Then when it comes to the bank, speaking to the bank will tell you that the rent that property needs to generate to get that mortgage isn't achievable. So your average buy-to-let buyer in London probably needs more like a 30 to 40% deposit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So cash wins.
Not everyone out there has a 30 to 40% deposit to buy a buy-to-let, do they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we are still seeing them there anyway.
Yeah.
Hopefully rates continue to reduce, and then the rental stress tests reduce as well. Mm. And then it means that more people can buy buy-to-lets.
There must be a fair number. You know, you have what's accidental landlords, so someone that inherits a property as well. And a lot of, on many occasions, obviously not all of them, they will be mortgage free at this point. So I suppose at that point, I mean, you guys are just not really needed. Or maybe there's just like a smaller mortgage, so then it becomes a better investment at that point.
Yeah. And then the problem is as well, obviously, with the stamp duty changes for additional properties, there are a lot of people. I used to do so many let-to-buy transactions. And by let-to-buy, someone becoming an accidental landlord. So they have a property. It may have a mortgage on it. It usually does. It might not. They want to move out of that property, buy a new one, but they want to keep that. They want to keep that property and turn it into a buy-to-let. Usually, what we'll do is we'll remortgage that property, take out some cash to put deposit down on the new property.
Okay.
Now, with these changes now to stamp duty for additional properties, and obviously the 5% surcharge, there are a lot of people that would have been accidental landlords. Putting out more buy-to-lets onto the market, who now are saying there is no way that I am paying that level of stamp duty.
Yeah.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else that you want to ask?
No, I think we've covered a lot of it. I think that's, you know, as we talked about this is the working part of the property side of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important is buyers speak to people like yourself very early, because it gives some assurance, I guess, because we speak to a lot of potential buyers looking at properties who are, you know, I'm interested, I want to see it. And obviously then you ask them the next questions, like, what's your position? And a lot of them, I'm about to put my property on the market. And actually they've not done the early stages, hence why we'll introduce them to you for you to check with them, and then they know their position.
Absolutely.
But also, I guess, if, and this is one of the ones that something's happened fairly recently, but if someone's looking to buy a property, I'll say, and they need the seller is adamant on a certain amount of money, that if they've not spoken to a broker at that point, they should really come and speak to somebody to see if there's a way that you might not be able to make a huge difference, but obviously it's potentially open up. Is that, do you get people like that really need to find like an extra
all the time,
10, 5, 50 grand
all the time? Most people I sit down with don't actually realize like how much they can borrow. It's usually the case that they can borrow a lot more than they think, and it's part of some of the big changes that we've seen in the mortgage market this year. Everyone talks about rates, and rates have reduced this year, and they've reduced a lot over the last couple of years as well versus where they were at 2 years ago. And you'll always read about that in the newspapers. What you won't read about in the newspapers, because you have to speak to someone like myself to find this out, whilst lenders haven't been able to reduce rates as quickly as they like, what they can do is they can make really big policy and criteria changes. And we've seen lenders massively enhance income multiples. And what I mean by that is, most people know that lenders would offer you maybe 4.5 times your annual income. Most lenders nowadays will offer you 5 times, even 5.5 times your annual income. And the big difference is, it used to be the case that to access like 5 times your annual income, you used to have to earn a minimum of £100,000. There are lenders out there that with income of £50,000 now, you can borrow 5 to 5.5 times. And this is a lot of the stuff that people don't realize. And it's not just about base salary as well. You have lenders out there now who, if you get monthly commission, lenders, because things like commission and bonus, they're not guaranteed. Lenders typically won't use 100% of that. The industry standard used to be that they would use like 50% of what we call variable income. Lots of lenders now will use 60%, 70%. We even have one or two lenders that would use up to 100%. These are things that people don't know about because you won't read about this stuff in the newspaper.
Yeah. Is that 100% of their commission? Is that like, do they look at it over like 3 years that you kind of have to almost hit that each time? Or is it,
so if it's,
if you had a really, you know, yeah, we're self-employed, if you could have an amazing year, but the year before you might not. I guess they factor that in.
Yeah. So for monthly commission or bonus,
yeah,
lenders will look at a 3-month average,
yeah,
and then they'll annualize that to get an annual amount. And then depending on which lender you approach, they'll usually use 50 to 60%, but we've got options even all the way up to 100%. If it's an annual bonus that you get, typically with most lenders, a 2-year average,
yeah,
and again using that 50 to 60%. If someone comes to me and they've got their bonus this year was way higher than last year because it's been a really good year, had a promotion, that kind of thing, then we would potentially go to a lender specifically who only looks at the latest year instead of a 2-year average. And that's where the industry knowledge comes in. When you're self-employed, it's a little bit different, and it can be a lot more difficult to secure a mortgage when you're self-employed if you've only been self-employed for a couple of years, if the business is relatively new. Because unlike when you're employed, you can just get a pay slip, you can have a pay rise. They'll even use a letter from your employer to say, in 3 months' time, you're going to get a pay rise to X amount. When you're self-employed, they'll only look at income that you've declared to HMRC.
Yeah.
That means they'll only look at typically your latest 2 years of tax returns.
A letter to yourself saying, I'm going to pay you this, doesn't work.
Doesn't, unfortunately. Used to back in the day, back in the wild west of mortgages.
I'm going to pay myself £10 million each month.
If only it was that easy.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's great.
Okay. Brilliant. That was so interesting. And I actually feel like we should do another one where we go into a bit more detail about first-time buyers, yep, or accidental landlords. And I think there's just so much more to dig into with this. I didn't think I'd be so excited by mortgages.
Well, I'd say, yeah, that mortgages is the same as what I used to say about block management. It's like the non-glamorous side of property, but it's
really
like
important.
But it's the most, it's almost like the most important part.
Yeah, I mean, I see,
I'm not gonna block management because we've just discussed how you don't like your block management, but you know, that's how it runs. It's a bit that you don't see. It's just, it's working away.
I know. I see a lot of these property podcasts and everyone loves talking about the big, beautiful houses that they're selling and all the deals, yeah, that they're doing. And it's really nice. And it's really amazing to see all this like property porn online as well. The finance side of things, it's looked at as the more boring side, but it is a necessary side. And hopefully I haven't made it sound too boring today.
No, you've been brilliant. No, you've been brilliant. So thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on Let's Talk Property. And until next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Care. Bye.
Done.